You're listening to Draft Chaff. Coming up this week.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Draft Chaff. This is episode number 187. My name is Zach, one of your hosts, and joining me, as per usual, Ben Fisher. What's going on, dude? I think, I don't know. Something feels weird about this episode number.
What? You think we skipped one? I don't know what you're talking about.
See, we couldn't have skipped one. I remember recording it.
Let's just say that maybe one or more co-hosts really messed up and somehow deleted their entire recording. One or more, at least one, are culpable here.
Well, here's the thing. I would expect if that were to happen, and I'm not saying it did, but if that were to happen, the person responsible or persons responsible probably would have done so for something like really important or serious, right? It couldn't have been something like a meme. Like that would be absurd. That never would happen.
No. The fact, the mere notion, not even fact, the idea even, that one or more co-hosts would attempt to screen share a meme around which the title of the episode was based, a pun even, an old Vine, pulling it up on YouTube, and then accidentally end the stream, and then accidentally mess up his recording, such that when he joined again, none of his audio was recorded, even though it looked like it was. I find that mere notion insulting, and I'm not going to be commenting on it further.
It was Ben. All right, on to our usual housekeeping. If you're not already in the Discord, do check that out. It's the best place to be to chat all things MTG. And when, should this ever happen again, and Ben totally botches the recording in the future, the Discord is where you'll get announcements about that kind of thing, as well as, while last week's episode didn't actually release because we lost all of Ben's audio, Ben did put a lot of time into fleshing out our usual show notes, and typically those show notes are only provided to our Patreon patrons, but this week, or last week I should say, we decided to flesh them out further and release them to everybody as kind of a, hey, we messed up, sorry,
here's
something
I'm
of an episode
of.
They looked great. Yeah, I think you did a great job with them.
Thanks.
So if you want access to the show notes for episode 186 that never really released, jump into the Discord. That's available to everybody through there. You can find the link to that in our episode description, as well as on our Twitter page. And if you'd like to support the show directly, maybe get access to the show notes on a weekly basis, check out Patreon at patreon.com/draftchaffpod. Huge thanks to each and every one of our patrons who continue to support us every week. And last week we had a new patron, Blake, who joined us. Thank you so much, Blake, for your support. Of course, we did shout you out last week, but the episode didn't air, so you're getting a second shout out this week. Thank you so much for your support. Perks over there include things like our custom Draft Chaff hero stickers. This set or season, it's been Itzkinth. We've got a really cute custom Itzkinth sticker.
Those are coming.
And those will be coming very soon. And of course, like our Draft Chaff cube drafts and a ton of other different things, show notes, our pre-show recordings, personalized videos from Ben and I, things like that. And the funding there is going into making the show better, getting an editor, funding our bounty boards, which are still underway, by the way, if you're
those
still working
done,
for the Ixalan bounty boards. Yeah, there's only, what, maybe 2 weeks left?
Yeah, we're going to have to send out some bounties. I guess anyone else who hasn't taken a look at the achievements, get those in now while you still can. You got some packs coming your way.
For sure. So again, you can check that out at patreon.com/draftchaffpod. All right, under crack draft type thing, Ben, what do we have here?
We have just a pack one, pick one from LCI. We're getting close to the end of the format. Time to give it a little more love. We've kind of avoided giving LCI love in this past couple weeks. We've been talking a lot about Cube, a lot about the random holiday stuff, and it's a fine format. It's just not really my cup of tea. It's just not very exciting. Let's start with Hidden Volcano. This is the Red Cave. Bleh. You know, red, I think, is the color that uses caves the worst, because sometimes red decks don't want to play a tap land. And on turns like 1 to 4, they just want to play like a turn one, the little 1/2 goblin, and then just curve out from there with a bunch of artifacts and just kill you quick. Sometimes this actually can mess up your curve. We've got a Whatley's Final Strike, bit of a clunky green removal spell. You play it, nothing to write home about. It's fine. Poison Dart Frog. This is a solid one in green. If you can play Poison Dart Frog on two and then like Pathfinding Axe Jaw on three, like the 5/4 if it explores properly, it's pretty scary. And it can just, you know, trade for a flyer in the late game.
Yeah, it's a little dork that like actually does something in the late game, which I always appreciate, and does stop or slow down the flyers decks in the format. So this is probably my pick so far.
Yeah. Deep Goblin Skull Taker, two and a black. That's the 2/2 with menace and descend. If you descend at this turn, you put them on one counter on it. If properly enabled, this card can grow pretty big. In a deck we're actually going to talk about today, I got it up to a 12/12.
Wow.
Yeah. Probably a record. Next up, Plundering Pirate, the 3-mana 3/2 ETB make a treasure. It's good to curve into if you have a Captain Storm. Captain Storm into this obviously works out really well. Make a treasure, you put a counter on probably this thing, make it a 4/3 instead. I don't know. This is no Sailor of Memes, right? It kind of looks like it, though. It's just more aggressively slanted. The 1/4 body was doing more towards that. This combination of stats, you know, it's just a 3/2. It trades with 2/2s and 3/3s. It's the most generic, you know, role player in any limited deck you can possibly have. It's fine.
That said, I'm probably taking it over. Well, I don't know. It seems close between that and Poison Dart Frog, to be honest. I might just take Pirate, but they both just go in any deck that can cast them. So,
yeah,
you probably prefer to have the Dart Frog, actually.
Yeah, I do like the red based artifact stuff more, but so does everyone else. And everyone has seen the data. Everyone knows the Jeskai artifacts and like cheap 1/2/3 mana spells are the best things to do in the format. So there is actually some play to being able to draft non Jeskai decks. So I might not start with Poison Dart Frog. I still do angle towards playing the best decks in the format. But, you know, if you see a Poison Dart Frog, like pick 7, then you go, all right, well, maybe green's just wide open.
Yeah.
Quicksand Whirlpool, 6-mana, exile target creature, and it costs 3 less if it targets a tap creature. There are white defensive decks in this format. You just have to be very careful that you're along that vector. I found blue-white sometimes winds up a little more along this vector than most. Sometimes the blue-white artifact deck isn't as beat down as red-white is, or even red-blue. So I will play a copy of Quicksand Whirlpool if I'm playing like a slower white deck. That being said, like, you know, this doesn't really do anything in white-green. It's just kind of clunky. I'll play like one copy in blue-white if it's controlling.
Yeah, definitely not a first pick.
Malamute Veteran. This could say 5-mana, and then it could have any combination of text and stats, and I still wouldn't really be that interested. Just a 5-mana green beater is not really great in this format. I mean, there's a pacifism in this set. What are you going to do? Play this and then just get it pacified or die before you play it? There's good bounce spells. I don't know. It's a 5-mana, 5/4, whatever. Next. Next one is actually a good card. Oaken Siren, the one of the blue 1/2 flying vigilance, and it taps for blue. To spend only on artifacts. That comes up pretty often. Getting to attack this, I've attacked this into a, I think it was like a 2/1 flyer, and then I use the tap ability to play the cogwork little guy, the one that gives -2/-0 to a creature your opponent controls. Mm-hmm. Something like that. That was pretty cool. Or maybe it was a Poison Dart Frog. I don't know. I did some cool trick with that recently. I'm a big fan of Oaken Siren. It wears Zoetic Glyph the best out of basically anything in the format, because then you end up with a 5/4 flying vigilance that taps for mana, which is obviously pretty stupid. Big fan of Oaken Siren. I would slam it here over this other junk.
Yeah, definitely. And it just fits the best into like a handful of other decks. So definitely a key card in these like artifact beatdown decks.
Brood Rage, Mycoid, 4-mana, 4/3. Descend, make a 1/1 that can't block. Nope. I don't know. This whole fungus token descend thing, just not a supported vector. This is a bit of a trap. All right, Everett Commons, definitely on Oaken Siren. Some solid uncommons, though. We've got a Sunbird Standard here. This is our craft card, our flip card of the pack. It's seated that way. It's kind of fun if you're playing like a multicolor sort of cavesy nonsense deck. I've definitely played a couple Sunbird Standards. When you get to exile 3 things with this and make it like a 4/4 or a 3/3 by like exiling multicolored stuff, it actually does work. Like, this is a 5-mana the flip. You can get up to a 5/5 flying vigilance haste that taps for mana equal to its power. That's really good. So when you have, again, defensive tools, you can make Sunbird Standard work, but not something I'm going to take highly.
Yeah, definitely not a first pick. This is the kind of card that you have a nice shell going already, and you slot into the deck later when you realize that you have a home for it. Definitely not something we want first pick.
Yeah, this saves you from having just a totally unplayable splashing deck where you're doing all sorts of nonsense, being like, oh, this card actually does make that kind of thing work. We got Dauntless Dismantler, one of the white 1/4. It's like an artifact hate card. No, not even with artifacts being so good in this format. This card's just inefficient. It doesn't really... You could side it in if you're playing like best of three. No, I'm not. I'm not playing this one. Explorer's Cache, another similar one that it's just kind of junky. Blue-Green Explorer is one of the worst decks in the format. If the deck were better, this one might work out better. And even in green-white, where they kind of care about... The vector is pointing towards augmenting your power, putting stuff on, counters, equipment, pump spells even. This could have worked out well there, but that deck didn't really have enough support outside of the signpost, so nope. And a Cavernous Maw, the cave that can animate itself to become a 3/3 for two, which is actually a pretty solid card if you can have three or more caves either on the battlefield or the graveyard. And that's the trick. It's kind of hard to do.
Yeah, it's another one. And we may be talking about this today, but I've still not really figured out when to get into the caves deck, because you want to take the caves highly so you get enough of them. But then at the same time, you don't really want to take them too high, because if you don't get enough of them, you wasted picks early on cards that you don't end up wanting to play. So I don't know where you're supposed to start taking these. And my guess is that you actually aren't supposed to try to build the caves deck to build the caves deck. More on that later.
Exactly.
But I don't think I'm on Cavernous Maw at all. I think I'm still on Oaken Siren.
Now, we've actually got two rares here. This is a simulated real-life crack pack. So we've got a Tishana's Tidebinder as our regular rare. Now, if this were real life, you'd just take it and call it a day, because this is like a $25 card.
Yeah, whatever. Just cash and have it a day.
Or go play it in like your blue-black deck in Standard or whatever. Tidebinder's solid. It isn't just a 3-mana 3/2 flash, which you're never really too sad about. And the fact that you can counter an activated or triggered ability, just look at this pack. Basically, all these creatures have activated their triggered abilities. Like, yeah. Plundering Pirate, an ETB trigger, Deep Goblin Skull Taker, an End of Turn trigger, Poison Dart Frog. You could counter its Death Touch activation and make it die to your flyer. That's pretty tight. I guess you could counter Oaken Siren Tapping for mana.
Usually the counters are not mana abilities.
Oh, I guess it can't.
Yeah, mana abilities can't be countered. But
yeah. Okay, whatever. It's still a pretty effective card. I actually played a game where my opponent played the 6-mana 6/6 that makes you sack two creatures. Each player sacks two creatures. They had a bunch of tokens. They're about to get a huge value swing. I flashed in Tidebinder, and it was no problem. It turned into a vanilla 6/6 instead. So it does marginally downgrade creatures, but the more... I guess as Magic has evolved, more creatures have these activated and triggered abilities. So Tishana's Tidebinder.
Yeah, you definitely can't outpace people with this. Like,
yeah.
You still want to be very choosy about which ability you counter. And this is more of a tempo play than anything else, because abilities typically, unless you're countering an ETB or something, especially activated abilities, they can just do it again next turn. You know, like
you're really looking at this forever.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? Tidebinder does that.
And the cool thing is it makes it lose all abilities. So if it had like flying or lifelink or something, that's just gone.
Yeah.
It just becomes
that's true.
So I do like this, but we have a foil rare and it's Intrepid Paleontologist. That's the one of the green mana dork, and it taps to add mana of any color. Or you can exile cards from graveyards and play dinosaurs exiled that way. A funny build around, and honestly, a very good card. If you're playing even a handful of dinosaurs with this, you just get to keep casting them. It's really good.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about like Poison Dart Frog being one of the better cards in the pack, and that's a 2-mana 1/1 that taps to add mana. This is a 2-mana 2/2 that does that and then lets you recast all your bombs. So,
yeah. Dinos is a good deck, and this is a good card in a good deck, and it's also enables some splashing. I couldn't fault someone for taking Paleontologist over Tidebinder here. I personally would take Tidebinder because I like being blue in this format more than I like being green. But I think there's more good blue decks than good green decks. So I would take the Tidebinder, but I think Paleontologist, or honestly, Oaken Siren is pretty close to both of these cards. I wouldn't fault someone for taking Oaken Siren over both of these.
Yeah, which kind of feels bad, but I'm right there with you. I probably would have taken Tidebinder as well. To your point, I think the red-blue decks are really where you want to be, and yeah, everybody knows that, but you know, if you can take a rare that slots into those decks well, it's not like the perfect rare for those decks, but it is a solid card in those decks. It starts you off on a good foot, and then, you know, we'll see what happens. But three viable picks there, yeah.
So we finally caved. Let's jump into our main topic. It's finally time to talk about caves. We've kind of put this off for a while because caves are just not good or fun or well-designed. But I mean, think of Bat Colony, right? The 2 and a white enchantment. When it ETBs, make a 1/1 black bat creature token with flying for each mana from a cave spent to cast it. Which means if you use a cave to, say you have the common caves, right? The common ones that activate, you cascade or whatever, discover, sorry. And then you hit the bat, you get none. You get no bats because no mana from caves is spent to cast it. Even if you have 7 caves in play when you did that, you would get no bats from your bat cave payoff. That sucks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then some nonsense about putting a counter on something. I don't know. These payoffs, they just didn't really hit the same way that a lot of the payoffs for these type of jank archetypes tend to. And these vectors tend to be our favorites. Like, we love playing Gates. Gates is fun. It's silly. Made it into the cube even, although that might be temporary. I don't know. We'll see. But this is something that we should love. But it's just so bad that our love of winning has sort of outbalanced our love of nonsense. However,
well, when the nonsense is fun, that's one thing. But when it's at all, then yeah, of course, if you're not winning and it's not fun.
Yeah, that's true.
Why bother?
I've certainly O3'd with Storm decks and Vintage Cube that are a ton of fun, but I cannot actually like win a game with reasonably. You know, when you like spin your wheels for 10 minutes and then you just like, oh, actually, I think I exiled my win condition. Right. Next game.
Yeah. You missed something silly in the middle of your wheel spinning.
Yeah. This is not like that. This is the unfortunate combination of not very good and not very fun. But I was browsing Magic Twitter last week and I saw a tweet. I can't even remember by who. I'll have to look it up. And it was something along the lines of, if you're drafting in the Arena Open and you get past a bunch of good Caves cards, you better know how to play them. Because if it's day 2 of the Arena Open and you're trying to maximize win percentage here, you can win games with Caves. I almost hate to admit it because I don't think it's a terrible idea. If your friend asks you, hey, I'm about to go to my first LCI draft ever, should I draft this fun Caves thing? If you just say no, that's fine. That works. You're better off. If you're going to do like 3 drafts of LCI ever, you probably should just not touch Caves if you're trying to maximize fun and winning. But
and by touch them, you mean try to build the deck. Of course, putting random caves in your deck can be useful.
Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, don't build around the fact that you have caves. Yeah,
exactly. Now, that being said, we tend to take a more critical look at things than just, oh, that's totally unplayable. And for a while, I guess it's on us that we kind of did write off caves entirely. And then I would occasionally get beaten by a solid Caves deck. And then this kind of begs the question, how do you make Caves good? And if we apply a little bit of vector theory, it actually becomes pretty clear. Caves want you to have enough Caves in play so that you can actually start maximizing these payoffs, right? They want you to play a longer game than these red and white beatdown decks are suggesting. They want you to have 3, 4, 5 caves in play. Now, realistically, that can only happen. You're getting max like maybe 5 caves in a draft if you're lucky, just because of how statistics works and how many are opened, and other people will take a couple here and there. And then statistics of how many lands you see in a draft. Well, to have 3 caves in play, which is the threshold for a lot of these caves cards where you actually start to feel like you're getting a payoff. If you have 3 caves in play and you had 6 in your deck, that means you're halfway through your deck. So that means you have to be playing a long game. So then the question becomes, all right, how do I maximize this caves vector? Well, all the other cards in your deck should point towards playing a long game. And you actually can do that in LCI. And the way to do it is with black. And black has these tools that help you beat these super red white beatdown decks, most notably through life gain. So I hate to say it, but I think I drafted a good Caves deck. It's actually a good blue-black deck with a Caves subvector. So I'm not going to talk about every single card in the deck. I think it'd be worth, for those maybe with Spotify video, take a quick peek here. Maybe those watching on YouTube, you already know what's up. I'll post this picture in the Discord too. I've been kind of avoiding Discord this week because I don't want any spoilers for the story. So sorry if I've been quiet. I'm reading the story, I swear. There's like 9 chapters out already. I don't know how that even happened. Like, when did they start doing that? So I will highlight some things, though. First of all, let's talk about the Caves. I'm playing blue-black. My mana base, I have one Hidden Courtyard, the white one, one Hidden Necropolis, the black one, and then a Cavernous Maw, a Forgotten Monument. Cavernous Maw is the one that animates into a 3-3. Forgotten Monument makes them pain lands to pay for mana of any color. And then I have 2 Captivating Caves. So I do have 6 total Caves. That's a solid number of Caves for a deck like this.
Yeah.
Then I've got 5 Islands and 6 Swamps. So I am playing a 17 lander total. And my ratios are pretty good. Given my mana base, I'm happy. Even playing a Hidden Courtyard as like an off-color Cave. I just wanted an extra Cave to get my lands up. Now, let's talk about my payoffs. I've got 2 Gargantuan Leech. This card, I'm hoping it comes down as a 5-mana 5-5 lifelink. That's how you stop red-white. Just a 5-mana 5-5 right. Lifelink. If they can't kill it right away, you at least get to stabilize. And if you get to gain 10 life off of this, a red-white deck is going to have a really hard time recovering in any format, putting you to some kind of pressure from there. Now, key to this, I also have 2 Echo of Dusk. This, I think, is maybe what the Caves really need, an early way of somehow getting a lifelinker in play. So Echo of Dusk is the 2-mana 2-2, and if you have to send 4, it gets 1-1 in lifelink. Now, to help enable this, I've kind of crafted the rest of the game plan around it. So I have 2 Deadweights, which obviously go really well with the Echo of Dusk. I have an Eaten by Piranhas, a sort of similar Deadweight. It's basically a Deadweight. You can put this on a thing that's about to trade in combat so that it dies instead. Then this goes to the graveyard. I have some other stuff that doesn't mind going to the graveyard early. I have a Skullcap Snail. That's perfectly fine to play, trump block with in the early game, goes to the grave to help enable the Echo of Dusk. I have Deep Goblin Skulltaker to kind of work with that as well as the Deadweight. Soul Coil Viper to put itself in the graveyard and also to get back a single copy of Rampaging Spiketail. It's my only land cycler, but it's nice to have that package. I actually have a Chart of Course and a Deep Cavern Bat as sort of like an early game package. Chart of Course, if I ever do have in the early game, my plan would be to attack with one of these little dorkers, like a Skullcap Snail, Deep Cavern Bat, one of the Echoes of Dusk. You don't mind trading them if you have to. And then Chart of Course for some advantage. Chart of Course, you really would prefer to draw 2 and not have to discard with this deck. It's actually a bit off vector. This deck isn't that great at attacking in the early game because I only have like 4 2 drops and no good 1 drops. But you can even play this on turn 4 or 5 and it's fine. You want to hit your land drops. That's why you'd prefer to be attacking with this. In the 3-drop slot, I actually have a Tishana's Tidebinder. This card is pretty flexible. It's hard to find a matchup where you can't make some sort of good use out of this.
Yeah, there are a lot of cards with the activated and triggered abilities in the set.
Yeah. Malicious Eclipse. This is the 1 black-black, all creatures get -2/-2 on the hell in the turn. Not the type of card you'd usually think to main deck, but the type of deck that would be able to overwhelm me most, the type of deck that I'm most afraid of, is this blue-red artifacts deck that just floods the board with 2/2s and starts building them up after that with Captain Storm or something else to that effect. So playing this main deck, I actually found really effective. I actually got to wipe a board. I played against an opponent on black-white, and they had Ogier, the white one, where it was a token tripler. And they actually did start tripling tokens. They played the 3-mana ETB make 2/1/1s, and they made 6. Next turn, I top decked Eclipse, and it would have killed me, but I had the Eclipse. So that worked out pretty well.
Eclipse is also interesting in a deck like this because you are riding that line between not really wanting to mill yourself, but also kind of wanting to get Descend 4 online. And Eclipse lets you wipe your opponent's board without putting stuff in their graveyard while potentially killing off some of your own stuff and sending them to the graveyard. So,
oh, that's a good point. I didn't even notice that.
You can send your own snail that way and yeah, and stuff like that. So kind of a weird like middle ground for this the kind of two vectors that you have pointing here. Mm-hmm. So I like that as a bit of tape to hold the deck together.
Now in the four drop slot, I've got a Roaming Throne. This was my pack one, pick two, which was surprising to get passed given that it's such a generically solid card, but I was happy to pick this up. I'll copy basically anything in this deck, particularly sixth to copy a Chupacabra Echo. This card is obviously awesome in this deck. I have another chance to get it back, a Soulcoil Viper to get it back. I'm playing a Grasping Shadows. Now, I actually have two in my pool. I took these early. I thought I was going to be more of like a black-white beatdown deck, but then it was actually around pack one, pick six, that I got a Sinuous Benthosaur. And I was like, you know what? I have some solid stuff that could point me towards a late-game vector. By that time, I already had the Throne, the Echo, an Echo of Dusk, and a Deadweight. And I was like, you know what? This black deck, it actually does want to go to the late-game. Sinuous Benthosaur, if you can get this thing to actually hit the battlefield, 6 mana, 4/4, draw 2 with card selection. The best I've been able to do is with 3 caves in play. But even with 2 caves in play, you get to draw 2 cards. That's a very solid card. And with the ability to trade it off and reanimate it, I mean, that's a pretty tough to beat late game engine. In the 5-drop slot, I've got a Ray of Ruin. I just needed more removal. And an Ukspin back. So I've got the blue-black signpost uncommon. It's actually a pretty solid win condition in this deck, which does just kind of want to control the board, control what your opponent's up to. And then eventually you slam a 6/4 Menace. It's a bit of an annoying threat to deal with. And then I mentioned my two Gargantuan Leeches. I am hoping that those come down somewhere around the 5-drop slot. And then in the 6-drop, I mentioned the Benthosaur and also the Rampaging Spiketail. And that's the deck. And I got to say, I was very impressed in the games that I played so far with it, with this deck's ability to both make it to the late game such that you have time to draw your caves. And then when you get to land a 6-mana 5/5 Lifelinker, that's really good. And then when they inevitably kill it and you get it back with Soulcoil Viper or another chance, that's also really good. So the way I'm going to approach caves is not as a single deck. I think this is a good way to enable the caves vector. That we found a blue-black deck whose vector pointed in the same direction as the caves vector. Make it to the late game, resolve some big bombs, take over and win from there. And it just so happens that these two vectors pointed in the exact same direction. So I'm not sure how well this would work in other decks, maybe even like a green-black deck. I'm not sure this would be as effective. I feel like the green deck wants to ramp into its bigger creatures early. Mm-hmm. But it certainly worked for this one.
Yeah, well, I'm noticing a few things that are interesting to me in terms of putting the caves to use, right? You don't have any of the payoffs that care about caves casting things, like Bat Colony, which you mentioned. The payoffs you have are the ones that track how many caves you have in play or in the graveyard, which also feeds into Descend, because if you can put your caves in the graveyard, you're enabling Descend while also enabling your caves payoffs. And so the two are similarly, as you mentioned, like the two are kind of pointing in the same direction. They're feeding each other. And then you are kind of using that keyword ability of lifelink to stabilize both early with the Echo of Dusk and late with your leeches. And that will eventually, you can kind of picture just by looking at this deck list, how games play out against an aggressive deck, which I think would be your worst matchup when you're trying to do the caves thing. Where you've got this like uphill battle to just stay alive, but eventually if you stay alive long enough, you'll reach the summit of that uphill battle and start to go downhill, and you're picking up speed, and then you kind of are steamrolling your opponent because you just have these bigger threats than they have. Their deck wasn't designed to go that long, and if you can just push them and push them longer to be able to get to that end game, then you kind of get to see the win approaching as you're going about it. So I think these were two perfect vectors to kind of smash together. And I think that is how you want to picture caves going forward. It's not necessarily that caves is its own deck, but rather a package of cards that you're using to amplify a vector of your deck already existing.
Exactly. So curious to hear if any listeners out there have done something similar or if you've had similar success with caves. But I actually like this one. And I would, if I was told I'd have this deck, or like a random other blue-black deck without this Caves vector on day two of the Arena Open, I think I would take this one. I actually do like this package. It worked out really well.
Yeah, I am curious because I haven't seen any like real stats on this, and I haven't drafted the format in paper. But I'm curious if you were to draft this in pod, how well cave, like the quote unquote traditional caves, like all in caves deck stacks up against these sort of out of pod leagues that we have on Arena, where maybe you do have a caves deck that's actually quite good relative to the other decks that are drafted in your pod, but it doesn't matter because you're just playing against all these other people on ladder who have way better decks, like agnostic of the power level of your caves deck. So I don't know. That would be interesting to see in the pod context. But I think, yeah, you seem to have found a way to approach caves that actually makes the vector fun to draft because you're playing this puzzle of how to, what vectors mesh well with the cave vector and can win games. So that's a pretty solid combination. All right, on to our listener question of the week. This week, our question comes from Spurlow, and we did answer this question last week, but we kept it out of the show notes so we could answer it on the air this week. So Spurlow, thanks for your question. And Spurlow asks, or rather says, I typically listen to the podcast using a single AirPod. Does the choice of ear I listen with impact my reception of the podcast content? Do you recommend listening to the podcast with the left ear or the right ear?
This is a great question. We speak only lies into the right channel and only truths into the left channel. So hopefully you've had it in the proper one.
Yeah, it's funny because I was talking with Ben about this when we answered it last week in the botched recording, where it would be very interesting if we could somehow like engineer the show such that if you listen to it with both headphones in, you just got the normal show. But then if you listen to it with just one, you got a coherent show that was totally different. That would be very interesting. Now, I will say today we don't split audio. Everything's stereo, so you'll get both my voice and Ben's voice in both ears. But when we first launched the show, I didn't know what I was doing with editing. And so we accidentally, or maybe it was on purpose, I don't actually remember at this point, recorded mono track and then publish such that one of us was in the left ear and one of us was in the right ear. So you would have only gotten one of our audios if you're listening to it with one headphone or AirPod in or whatever it may be. We did get a handful of complaints about that because there were some folks, or even if you're listening in a car, you'll hear like one voice come out of the left side and one voice come out of the right. And that's a little off-putting. And I didn't know that was happening because it was actually interesting when I was editing the show using headphones, I was getting stereo, so I could hear both of us in both ears, but I had some extra software in the middle of what I was listening, what was coming out audio formatting. It was basically getting fed through some software and then into my headphones, so that accounted for it and kind of fixed it. So I didn't actually know that the problem existed until listeners jumped in the Discord and functionally complained about it, that it was not a very good experience. We fixed that very quickly and shouldn't have that problem anymore. So that said, you would have noticed, I think, if that were the problem, because you'd just get one of us talking and then a long pause and then the same person talking again. But no, today you shouldn't have any issues listening to it with just one headphone.
Funny enough, a long pause followed by another person talking again is exactly what we'd have heard if we'd uploaded last week's recording.
This is true. In any case, thanks for the question, Sparlow. If you would like your question answered on the show, jump in the Discord, check out our listener questions channel where we take and solicit those questions. And we'll answer yours on the show too. All right, on to our Teferi Tibble. This is our Roses and Thorns style of segment where Ben and I share a high and a low from the past week. So, Ben, what's up?
Man, I guess we haven't really done this in 2 weeks. So I can't remember what happened the week before this. So I'll comment on what happened this past weekend. I played in the RCQ. It was limited, and it was for Ravnica Remastered. It went really well. Almost top eighted, came pretty close, wound up 10th out of 62, which I'm pretty proud of. Played my deck well, ended up just not making top eight. It's how it is. I had a great time. Looking forward to the next one. Definitely got the competitive itch. Once you get that close, you can kind of feel it. Similarly, standard testing is going pretty well. I'm 25-6 on the ladder, and I'm in high mythic right now. I think I'm a little above mythic 1200. So pretty happy with my standard testing too. I have something like an 81% standard win rate. So that's pretty good. 30, I think I made a crack.
31 games is statistically significant too, isn't it?
I think it is, right? I don't remember much from AP stats, but that's one thing. One thing I do remember is someone forgetting his calculator during the AP exam. That I'll never forget.
Yeah, well, at least that person still got a 3.
Anyway, my tilt this week, I was home kind of sick for the past couple days, which worked out because I had MLK day off and also a snow day. It just kind of sucked that I was home sick on days that I would have had off anyway. So I didn't really get to enjoy them.
Yeah.
Not great. What's up with you?
Well, also, I wanted to just throw out there, if you wanted more information on the deck that Ben played in the RCQ, we talked about that on the pre-show, which our patrons will get access to. So you can check that out over there on the Patreon. But for me, my big Teferi this week is I started a new job. I had actually taken about 2.5 weeks off between jobs, which I've never done before because I've always been – I'm like really good with my finances. Personal finance is a hobby of mine. And so I knew I was okay to do that and not worry about like not being able to fund my life or, you know, pay rent or whatever. But I still like wasn't excited about the idea of going 2 weeks without pay. And so it took a little bit for me to just be like, no, it's okay. You're allowed – like you can let yourself take some time off between jobs. Cause normally I'm the type of person who would finish one job on Friday, have the weekend off, and then start the next job on Monday and really get no time off per se.
Yeah. Nah.
But it was enjoyable. I did a ton of traveling. I was in Canada for about a week and then down to visit my family. And, it was just, yeah, it was really nice, to get to do that. My tibble is that travel is now over and I am back to work. So, you know, that is, I guess, the way of life. A little bit sad that the travel's over. I do enjoy traveling. It was a ton of fun. So sad that it's over, but it's also freezing cold. When I was away, I was in Canada, which basically it was like 3 degrees the whole time I was there, 3 degrees Fahrenheit. That is, it was very, very cold. And then we got back and it was like maybe 50 degrees Fahrenheit the weekend I got back. And it felt like I was like, oh, it's summer. Like, this is great. By comparison. And now it's back in like the teens up here. And so it's pretty cold. We got a lot of snow over the last couple of days, which I guess is maybe a Teferi and a Tybalt. I like snowfall like immediately when it's happening, but then like the next day it's all slush in the city and it's just disgusting. So mostly a Tybalt there. Well, that about does it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening. Do check out the Discord if you haven't already. It's the best place to be to chat all things MTG and come say hi to us. We'd love to have you there. Do check out the Patreon if you'd like to support the show directly at patreon.com/draftchaffpod. You can get all those perks we talked about before, personal videos from us, the show notes, pre-show recordings, our Draft Chaff hero stickers, all that fun stuff. And if you'd like to find us on social media, we're on Twitter at draftchaffpod. Thanks, folks, and we'll catch you next week.
Okay, real quick before we go. I've been drinking kombucha recently. I've been upping my drink game. I feel like I've become a bit of a tea connoisseur, but I've been branching out into coffee. I've got like a thing of cold brew in my fridge now. Getting into that. Never really was a big coffee drinker up in my life until I think I actually, maybe I had like a Dunkin' coffee when I was in high school and I was like, no thanks, I'm good. But now that I've tasted like actual coffee, I'm like, okay, I see the appeal here. But I recently got a giant thing of kombucha after having a single kombucha. I grabbed at a tournament actually. The RCQ a couple, maybe like a month or two ago, the modern one. I just grabbed it from the coffee shop that we were hosting. And I was like, wow, this is actually pretty good. So I got a big thing of it. And I at this point, I will admit, I don't actually know what kombucha is. And I'm too far in to ask. I'm just kind of going with it.
It's just a fermented tea, isn't it?
Well, I know it's supposed to be healthy, but like fermenting it makes it healthy. I don't know why. Are there like good bacteria in it? Like beer? Why don't you get drunk if it's fermented? I don't understand it. And at this point, again, I'm certainly not going to look it up. I'm too far in. I'm too deep. I'm just going to go with it. Feels pretty healthy though. It's refreshing. I like it. Have you had it?
I have before. It's not something I ever really like stuck to, but yeah, I'm a coffee guy through and through.